The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
We start,
yeah.
It's Footy Prime, everyone. It's a brand new week. It's deadline day. Deadline day across European football. Who's moving where, when, and for how much? Exciting days, actually, for Canada and some of our players. It is exciting. There's a number of players rumored to be on the move now, but it's difficult though, right, to discuss it on this podcast because by the time people hear this, it could well be that the deals are done. I think the deadline is what, 2 p.m. our time, isn't it? But I think Spain might be a little bit later, but it's 7 p.m. for UK and I believe like Italy and France, I think. Craig's here, by the way. Jimmy's here. Dubsy. There's Wonger. And I'm Sean.
Hey,
so how do we deal with this today?
Go with what we know.
Okay, well,
we, yeah, we still talk about it.
Well, let's start with how about this one? So as Jimmy is sitting there with his Southampton shirt hung proudly behind him, beside his Canada shirt, let's start with that. There was a report in The Sun that Kyle Larin is on his way to Southampton. Again, it's The Sun. It's never for sure. But Jimmy, for Kyle Larin, going from, well, La Liga to the Eredivisie, to the league championship, is it a good move if it happens? Let's assume it happens. Jimmy, is it a good move for Kyle Larin?
I think so. I do. I think it's going to be a good move for him. It's a great club, well supported, and it's one of the bigger championship sides. And I think if he goes there, I think he'll do very, very well. Saw with Ahmed as well. He ended up going to Norwich. He's lighting it up right now. He's enjoying his football. Again, good club, good fan base, good support. And with Southampton, if he goes there and he lights it up, you'll end up getting another move. And Southampton's a club as well that's always, it's up and down. It's in the Premier League. It's down. It's up. They're always competing. I mean, this year hasn't been great for them, but it's because they need a striker. They need someone that can come in and put the ball in the back of the net. And I think if Kyle Larin goes to Southampton, I think it'd be a very good move for him. And he'd enjoy it there. It's a great club.
I wonder how the Ali Ahmed success, Dubs, has changed some opinions perhaps over there about Canadian players. I don't think there's any secret that we have some good players now, given what's happened in, you know, well, the World Cup qualifying 2022, you know, the whole Jesse Marsh story since Copa America. But to see a Canadian, you know, make the jump to a good league, not tier one, but albeit in three or four games, looks so strong. Maybe it's turned some heads, it's fair to say.
I think it's definitely fair to say. I think ever since Jesse Marsh came on at the beginning of his tenure 2 years ago, I think, or coming up to that anyway, I think that people have been paying more attention to Canada. I think the fact that results and rising standing in the world game have certainly helped to showcase the talent that we have in Canada. But moves like Ali Ahmed, where he instantly hits the ground running and has success, can only help the stock of other Canadian players. But I do think, I know we're talking about Kyle Larin, you know, he looked just absolutely abject in that last performance he played for Feyenoord. He just looked devoid of confidence. Couldn't finish, not clinical, not the Kyle Larin that we know, who is head to head and like leading the goal scoring for our men's national team, right? Like he and John David for the longest time, it was like, okay, I'm in the lead. No, you're in the lead, and kind of pushing each other on the national team scene. But he just looked like he wasn't himself. So I hope wherever he ends up, he finds his feet, and this is a short-term thing. Like Jimmy's talking about his prospects in the championship and maybe changing minds and what the championship is like, say, compared to MLS, where more Canadians play their football. But I think to go back to what you're saying about Jesse Marsh and Ali Ahmed and changing minds, I think that it's done a lot for the stock of strikers and forwards playing the system of Jesse Marsh. You look at a guy like Stefan Eustachio, who's at Porto, and they talk about his leadership and how much he means to the squad, but he can't get a sniff. He can't get a look. Like any midfielder who comes in gets in before he does. He can't get some minutes. So he needs to find a move. He's rumored to go to MLS. So it's interesting to me, a guy who's so valued by Canada, who's so important to Canada having success, is so undervalued in Europe. Whereas a guy like Laren, whose stock is absolutely plummeting, I think people know what he can do when he's playing well. He gets a look potentially to Southampton, where he knows he's going to get some minutes, and he needs to get minutes if he's going to get selected to Jesse Marsh's World Cup team.
Yeah, I wonder, Craig, making those comparisons, Eustachio and Laren. I get what you're saying there, Dubs, but Laren is on a loan, right? Whereas Eustachio is obviously a permanent deal at Porto, so they're looking. I mean, maybe they're looking to loan him out, but like you said, they do seem to really appreciate what he brings to that squad and having depth. I mean, listen, Porto's bossing it in Portugal this year. They do need though depth, you know, and a guy that they can call upon in any situation if needed is probably a real bonus. A guy that is theirs, not on loan. From Eustachio's standpoint, and I don't want to get into too much about this because, like I said, you know, this could all be moot by the time people hear this later today.
But it's not. I understand what you're saying. Because, you know, things are going to change when that transfer window slams shut. But we're still talking about the players and their standing in Europe versus the national team and potentially World Cup squads and what types of players they are. It's not apples to apples if we're comparing Eustachio to Laren, but I think there's still important conversations to have about what types of players they are.
But from him, though, his standpoint as a footballer, obviously he wants minutes. But I think he's the one, well, there's more than one probably, but one of the players, certainly, Jesse Marsh, knows what he has. And I don't think whether he's playing at Porto or not is going to determine whether he makes not just the squad, but the starting 11 for Canada. Is that fair to say, Craig, do you think? With the Eustachio, okay, he's not playing right now. He's getting minutes off the bench here and there. But from a Jesse Marsh standpoint, if he enters the World Cup as a peripheral part of the Porto squad, is that going to really determine whether he as an important role in Canada?
I don't think so. I don't. It'd be nice to see him getting some more minutes, of course, and that's important to him and personally, and as well as the national team. For Laren, I think you've got a situation where Southampton don't want to spend a ton of money. They can get somebody who they think can score and is void of confidence right now. And they think that that can turn around. So they have some confidence in that. But I think it comes down to Southampton being in a financial situation that they are, mid-table, can still make a push for the playoffs. They're not out of touch with that. They've got a bit of work to do, but they need a run. But I think overall, I think it's a good move for Laren, and he will get opportunities.
Jimmy, up front, I mean, we always hear about confidence being the most important thing for a striker. More than any other position. I mean, every player is affected by confidence. I get that. That's life in general, right? I have a couple of bad podcasts, man. My head dips. You know, I'm not feeling good about myself. You know, I'm not sleeping very well. Just haven't got that confidence. I'm relying on you guys to lift me up.
Shadow
you
of
don't,
yourself.
You don't. Shadow
how's, your how's your confidence this morning?
Thanks. I had a good night's sleep. Really good night's sleep. My ring told me I had a good night's sleep, so I had a good night's sleep.
So it must be true.
I'm feeling pretty good about myself.
You can tell because your hair is like kind of sticking up.
The ring on your finger or the ring on your, which ring?
Are you referring to the cock ring? that never shows confidence in me.
No, I don't think it would.
That one doesn't change colors.
Just a dark blue jade.
Now I'm jaded.
What are those mood t-shirts?
It's a mood it's just always very dark and dull.
That's right. It's just onyx.
Why does it not change colors?
Anyway, as I was saying, strikers are different to the rest of footballers, but explain to me as a professional athlete really how confidence effects and how quickly can you get it back? If Carl Laren, like Dub said last week, got his first start in I don't know how many months, but didn't play well, showed that lack of confidence. How quickly can a center forward get it back? Is it simply a question of scoring that first goal?
Yeah, for strikers, definitely it is. They have to get into rhythm and start scoring goals. Look, when you think about it, with a team, our job on the rest of the players around the pitch is really to provide and get the ball to the strikers. That's their job. That's what they get paid for. They get paid to score. And when they're not getting the service or they're in these little ruts, yeah, you can see it. It affects them so much because they know at the end of the day, the rest of the team around them is working, doing the dirty work, trying to get the ball forward. And their responsibility as a striker and what they get paid for is to put the ball into the back of the net. So we all have. We've all played with strikers where they've been low in confidence. Things aren't going for them. They've been in a rut. They're like six games without a goal. And you can see their mannerism around the dressing room and the pitch where their shoulders are slouched, their head's down. And then all of a sudden they get that goal and they don't care how they score that first goal. That goal can come off their ass as long as it goes in the back of the net. And then they get a little, a spring in their step and that little bit of confidence. And that's what you want. You need your strikers to be confident, smiling, bubbly. I mean, they're the guys that love the limelight, aren't they? And that's why they make so much cash, is because they love that. They've got something about them as strikers. And then when you can get them going and they get into a rhythm, that's what you desperately want in your team, is to have a confident, positive striker. And with Kyle Larin, he's no different. He needs to get going, get himself going. It's like Jonathan David right now. Everybody was talking about him. Now he's filled with confidence and he's playing great football, scoring goals. And everybody wants a striker to be confident because they that they can win you games, especially those tight ones where it's a battle. In the 91st minute, they step up, bang, goal, and you end up walking away with 3 points. So, yeah, it's a huge confident thing. It doesn't take too long, but once they put the ball in the back of the net, you can see their mannerisms change.
It's never easy.
Sorry, Craiger, with Jimmy's acoustics, it feels like he's pontificating a little bit there. It was fantastic. I was really listening in.
What do you call it when you're on the
pulpit?
Dais?
Pulpit, I'm thinking.
Pulpit? Mm.
What do you say?
I was going to ask Craig, you were going to say something, yes. And I wanted to ask Craig a question after, and maybe Jimmy, because I know Craig's career, but it was more about how did your, like, and you obviously don't know what's going on with Kyle Larin, but if this goes through, how do kind of loans work? Is it a player instigated conversation? Is it a manager? Is it from the team? Like, you must have agency to just say, hey, I got to get the fuck out of here. I'm not playing. Like, there's got to be tell me how it worked for you back in the day.
Well, you can put some pressure on them, I guess, and it's probably a bit of both. He needs to be playing. He's asking that if there's a possibility that he could be loaned out again. You can understand why his confidence is down. I mean, his parent club has sent him out on loan. He ends up at a club where he thought he was going to get some minutes. He hasn't played particularly well or getting ample playing time. So now he's in a situation where, okay, now where do I go? Who's interested? It can be partly paid by your parent club. They could pay three-quarters of your loan spell. They could pay all of your loan spell. I mean, what is Southampton going to pay? That would be negotiated. But overall, it's a number of different factors that come into play. He can force it to a certain extent, but at the end of the day, he's also under contract in this loan deal. So it's up to Feyenoord and his parent club whether they agree to all this. There's a lot of moving parts for sure.
Yeah. And they'll want him to go on loan and like I said, get into a rhythm, start scoring goals, and maybe he goes back to the parent club because that's what they're looking for. They're looking for him to get back into that goal scoring streak. But a lot of the times it does come down to the player as well. I remember I ended up having a double hernia and I was just getting fit again. And I remember going into the office to sit with the manager and he goes, okay, what do you want to do? He goes, he didn't want me to play reserve team football. He goes, I need you to play first team football so that you're fit and you can come back and mm-hmm. get back into our first team. Mm-hmm. And I ended up going to Huddersfield and I went there because I knew Joe Jordan and Lou Macari. So they knew me. I was going to go get some games under my belt, but it didn't go according to plan because I got sent off and I was back in a a week and a half, 2 weeks. So
glossed over that. What did you do?
That went pear-shaped.
What happened there, Jimmy? What was red card for?
We were playing a game against Birmingham, and this guy comes on, young, full of piss and vinegar, right? And it was one of those games. It was quite boring, to be fair. Anyways, he comes on and he's rolling. I'm just, come on, let's get going. Anyways, the ball's up in the air. He comes across me, elbows me right in my face. And as I landed and he landed, I turned and I volleyed him right up the ass. And the ref comes over and he looks at me. He goes, what are you doing? I said, look at my face. He goes, yeah, but you can't pick him up the ass. I said, well, just give me a yellow and let's get on with the game. And he goes, I can't. He goes, because my assessors are here. I said, what does that mean? He goes, I have to send you off because it's a serious foul. I was like, you can't. I said, I'm on loan here. I've only been here like a week and a half, 2 weeks. He goes, I have to send you off. So he sent me off. And then that was it. I was back in my car going back to the forest. I walked in the training the next morning. The manager's like, why are you here today? I was like, that's not so.
More so like how does assessors.
Huddersfield said, go, leave, go. Joe Jordan said to you, sorry, there's no point hanging out.
Oh, they didn't even speak to me.
Oh.
Yeah, because there's no point. You're suspended for the rest of the loan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Oh, because it's a short-term loan, right, obviously, just for a few games.
But, Jimmy, I'm wondering, in that conversation with your manager to the move to Huddersfield, you were saying, oh, I knew the managers there. Did you, were there other squads, like other clubs on the table? You could have said, like, that's where did you have a say in going to Huddersfield?
No, because, I mean, let's be honest. If you're coming back from injury, there's not many teams that want to take you.
Oh, okay.
Right? Because they know that you're just going there to get your fitness. And I was lucky because Lou and Joe both knew me. They knew me as a person. They knew me as a player. And so they felt, okay, listen, at least if he comes and we get his fitness, at least he's going to be good for us.
Right.
Well, it kind of backfired because it wasn't good for him.
So if you're going to get a red card, you may as well make it a proper red card, right?
In that sense. Yeah, it just didn't go down well. It went down like a lead balloon.
Well, I also just think of the whole conversation that he had with the referee. That was like 16 minutes of pleading. Hey,
honestly, I was almost down on my knees with that one. I said, hey, you cannot send me off. This is not good.
They didn't even speak to you. But I mean, also, I think with loan deals, Wonga, it's the home club, the club that owns you, they send you there for a reason. With a young player, it's obviously for minutes. Like Craig went to Colchester.
Yep.
That's to get minutes to develop. But Kyle Dubs isn't there to develop. Mallorca is loaning him out, I would imagine, to get confidence so they can then perhaps sell him. I would imagine that's more their reason than developing. If they don't see him part of their plans for whatever reason, and that seems a little bit harsh because he actually played pretty well last year and when he first went to Mallorca.
Mm-hmm.
But from their standpoint, they're going in a different direction. They've got other players there. They want to get something for him. And if he's not in their plans and he's just not playing at the club they loaned him to, it only makes sense to find a club that he will get minutes so they can get some value for him, you think?
Yeah, because like what comes to mind firstly for me with Wonger's question to Forrest and Jimmy about how loans work, like how is it instigated? Is it at the player's behest? Is it the club's behest? Like how is it all happening? It makes me think of like the recent deadline day push from Liverpool's perspective for the Dutch defender, right, who's on loan at Sunderland from Leipzig. Remember, like that was scrapped because of the intricacies of the deal. Like you're on loan somewhere and then you're at a different club and then it's just almost too much overhead and too much paperwork. Like it's too complicated, right? But to your question, Sharms, I think absolutely Mallorca want to leverage their asset, which is Larin, as a striker, as a goal scorer, as much as possible. So if somebody's going to push for this and to try to facilitate it, I believe it is the parent club. It is the club that he's signed to in Mallorca, right? Like they want him to find as much success as possible so they can either use it and have him back when the loan deal's done or sell him on and make a profit. Like, that's really what it boils down to. Right. And then I hope for him, like, to my larger point and my initial point off the top, is it's a short term thing for him. He absolutely, the confidence, as Jimmy alluded to, can just turn instantly. And it can seem like all of, like, that black cloud is just completely lifted for a striker more than any other position. I would say the only thing that compares to it maybe is Forrest, the goalkeeper. I think, like, I went through a dip in confidence myself, and it took probably a full calendar year for me to regain it, because it's just a different animal. It's a different beast, and you regain your rhythm in different ways. But for a goal scorer, it's just as pure. It's just as simple as finding the net. Doesn't matter how you do it, right? With your ass, with your box, doesn't matter. You find a way to score, right? You tick that box.
Well, I don't think Carl's going to score with this box.
Wow.
No, he needs to get in the box, right? And sometimes weirdly that enough, can affect your confidence as well.
People don't know this about Dubs, but she shared with me it, the way she got her confidence back was, surprisingly, a cock ring.
What?
Interesting. Strangest thing.
Anyway, but so Dubs, he's but for you, though, seeing it. Yeah.
So okay, it's interesting you mentioned that, because obviously for a goal scorer, you score goals, you get confidence back. For a goalkeeper, make some saves, you just have a safe game where you're not making mistakes, you get confidence back. For a midfielder, a combative central midfielder, is it just a couple of great tackles? It took you a year to get your confidence back. Like, how do you, what is the main motivation to improve your confidence from that position?
It's your touch. It's the rhythm of the ball. It's finding that partnership with the people around you. But it's less so off the ball. And for me, it was very much on the ball. And it was just, stroking the ball, passing, short passes, finding my depth, my range of passing, again, finding confidence in that, playing with both feet. Getting the ball in tight areas and coming out of it, playing simply or turning and doing something a little bit more intricate. That wasn't out of my wheelhouse, but you're pushing kind of like your comfort zone. You're pushing the perimeters of that, or like the constraints of that, and making it bigger and bigger, and then operating within that day in and day out. And then that just translates finally on the pitch. And for different players, it's going to be different things, but the grittiness, the blue collar, the tackles, the ball winning, that was always there. It was what I could layer on top of that. And that's what was shattered for, like, after I wasn't picked up from WSA playing in the first iteration of a pro league in North America. And then it was like, they didn't take me because I was shit. And that was like the very black and white assessment that I'd made in my brain. That even though I was captain for Canada, even though I had like 50 caps to my name at like in my early 20s, I looked at myself in a mirror and I thought that I was shite. And that's why I wasn't picked up again as an international in that league. And right or wrong, like, it was just something that I had to deal with. And once I came out of it, then I was myself again and I was even better.
Did you, when you played for Canada during that stretch, were you also devoid of confidence, or did you feel better in that shirt?
No, I felt like a farce. I felt like I was impersonating somebody. It was really bad.
Wonga can add to this, but knowing Dubs as we do over the last number of years, I totally understand why she would have felt this way. Mm-hmm. So hard on herself.
Of course, she's quite hard on herself.
Yeah.
We're at the opposite ends of hard on yourself. Yeah. I'm like, oh, that was perfect. Walk away. Disaster over there.
The number of apologizing emails or messages we get from Dubs after some shows. I'm sorry, I was terrible today. Like, no, you weren't.
You were talking about. Yeah, you were.
And
the star,
I'm better.
Michelle.
I've learned. This is me kind of wily and experienced at almost 50, and yet I'm still hard on myself, but yeah. Whatever.
Crazy. Hey, Craig, for a goalkeeper, though, I mentioned there, you know, is it less about making a great save for your confidence? It's more about just getting through a game unscathed, collecting balls in the box from across safely, and just, is that how you get your confidence?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Just doing the simple things well. Decision making is a big part of it. Not necessarily making a big save, really. Just overall basics of your game and confidence, or organizing your defense, giving them a sense of confidence that you're back at it and behind them and you're safe. totally different than a striker. I think with Laren too, he's 30 years old. He'll be 31 in April or something like that. He's got to a stage where if they do get something for him, there's no resale value at the end of that contract.
Right.
Because he'll be 33, 34.
Right.
So that is attractive to some clubs because you can get somebody for a decent price, but you're also not going to have an asset that you're going to be able to get something for at the end of it when you get to that age.
Going back to your confidence, Forrest, after a 9-0 defeat or something, or a game where you didn't feel like you didn't feel like you were at your best, or just, you know, not quite what you wanted to provide in the net. Was there something that you did in practice, like a routine that you went back to that would give you that confidence again? That was kind of a reset.
Yeah, booking a hamstring in. avoid playing at all costs.
Come on. There wasn't anything you did in training that, like, you quite literally found your feet and you found your hands and your confidence?
No, you're just hoping the next time your defenders show up.
Oh, less about you and more about the back line.
Lame.
Yeah, I don't want to get blame. 30 shots a game.
Hey, Craig, was it the 7 or the 9 that you actually also saved the penalty? I forget which one it was.
The 7.
The 7, the United 7, yeah. Imagine that. You ship 7 goals, but you also save a penalty. Oh. You must have been pretty good at that point.
Yeah, I celebrated. Yes. I celebrated. Well, the United game, I said this before, I thought it was 10. So when I found out it was 9, I was overjoyed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you lost. That's true. You would lose count, eh, at some of this stuff?
I did. I totally lost count.
I mean, you don't look at the Jumbotron? I guess there wasn't a Jumbotron back in those days.
Well, they had a scoreboard, but it's probably, can't remember what it was at Old Trafford at that time behind me, but.
You almost need to in a spirit of self-preservation. Mm. We lost 7-1 to Norway at the World Cup in 99. I also lost track, and for good reason. You don't need to know at that point.
Yeah. It's the longest 90 minutes ever, too.
Mm-hmm. At what point do you lose track, though? When does a beating turn into a 4? Is it 4? Beating turn into a shellacking? Around about 4, right?
And yeah. North football, four, yeah. Like
6, 7, yeah.
How many pairs of gloves did you go through that season?
Just in general, I'm kind of interested, actually. Just in general.
Yeah, if anything, I changed my gloves, try to change the confidence.
Mm-hmm.
How long did, seriously, like, Craig, like, how many gloves would you go through in a pair in a season?
Quite a few, but if you have just your match gloves that you're going to keep around for just matches, and you can use those for several.
Do you practice the same gloves as you play?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Not the exact same, just the same model.
Okay, but not the exact, your match gloves are different to your training gloves.
No. And you got to remember, a training ball that you're using is completely different texture than what you're going to play in a match. When they bring out a brand new ball out of the pack, blow it up, it's slippery as hell. It's a bar of soap in the bathtub. It's completely different than what you're training with. And even at the end of, like, after 60 minutes, I notice a difference in the ball as far as grip goes and feel. Just in just the one game, but the brand new ball out of the pack is slippery.
Jimmy, anything you want to add there? Is the ball slippery when it comes out the package?
Apparently, it is. Texture of the balls is very very different. He's right.
I used to, for home games, I'd go in early and I would grab the match balls, like 3 of them that go into the referee's dressing room, and I would scrub the balls. I would blow them up and scrub the outside of them to make them a little bit more abrasive on the outside.
You weren't like a Hansi Kronje in that, you know, in the cricket with the old sandpaper trick, were you?
Yeah. Or balloon, what, ball gate or something in the NFL when they...
Yeah, right. Inflate gate.
Yeah. Inflategate, all right.
Would you use like a brush or something, Craig, or what would you do? Just scrape it with your hands? Brush.
Yeah.
Jimmy can't contain himself. So would you use a brush on the balls, or would you use sandpaper, Jimmy? I mean, I guess each to their own.
Well, as he's gotten older, Charms, it's more sandpaper.
That's right. More exfoliating.
That's right.
Yeah, like a disc and a drill.
Stop doing that.
Yeah. Like barbed wire down there.
Yeah.
But like, I need to know more. Like this brush, was it like in your kit bag with your shoes? It would like, how did you do that?
No, it was in the club bathroom where they did all their laundry and whatnot.
Okay.
It was like one of those, like a nail brush almost. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Who uses nail brushes anymore? Anyone?
My husband.
Oh, really? He uses a nail brush?
Yeah,
really?
In the shower, cleans his nails. It's very meticulous. I'm outing JP on the podcast, apparently.
Well, I haven't thought about a nail brush in probably 40 years. Growing up, there was always a nail brush in the bathroom.
But I would assume like a mechanic or someone who, roofer, all that, like any plumber, anyone who works with wires and kind of the trades, you'd have a...
I suppose so. But you'd keep your nails very short anyway, though, wouldn't you?
I would think so. I keep them short.
Yeah, absolutely. Does JP, is he one that, has he got nice hands? We discussed his feet before as a hockey player. Uh-huh. Awful. Nice hands?
Yeah. I mean, nice hands, but like, he's not precious about them. Yeah. Like he's also an ex-hockey player. No. But like his job, like where he's like changing steel and doing that sort of stuff, he's not the kind of mechanic or the engineer at that point, right? But it's still very hands-on.
Right. I don't know. Interesting. You can tell a lot about someone through the hands.
I thought you were making Dubs uncomfortable with how deeply you were prying into JP's manicuring of his hands.
Well, imagine JP in the shower right now.
Yeah, I know. That's
his nails. No, stop. Forrest.
You know, Dubs, it's not a nail brush in there. He's bullshitting you.
Well, I don't touch
anyway,
it.
This could be the problem. Okay. Where are we at? We could probably move on. Oh, okay. I was mentioning, do you see Fonzie about celebrating saves and celebrating this? Do you see Fonzie, that goal line clearance? He started off, I thought he was going to celebrate the goal line clearance. He was pumped up. I think he was more, though, kind of yelling at his teammates, perhaps. Like, let's go kind of thing, because Bayern Munich drew. Hey, Jimmy, were you in the game yesterday? I didn't see it yesterday or Saturday.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't on the game.
You weren't? Okay. Okay. No. But yeah, buy and draw. Fonzie, I tell you what, the speed looks pretty good to me. You saw him get back that goal-saving clearance.
Yeah, it was great, wasn't it?
Yeah. That bodes really well. Elsewhere across Europe this weekend, Ismail Kone scores again. Did you see his goal, though? I mean, how much space do you need? Oh, was it Pisa, what I think they're playing against? Like, no one he's in the area, and no one closed him down.
Yeah, he's right in a penalty spot, basically.
Yeah. Not taking anything away from the goal. Good for you, Ismail Kone. Mm-hmm. And his fourth this season. He's just flying out there right now.
But I'd be surprised if someone doesn't buy him.
Pardon?
I'd be surprised if someone doesn't buy him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems that way, right?
Yeah, he's playing
very,
very good.
What's his value now, I wonder? For at this point, can we call him a goal-scoring midfielder? Probably not quite yet. But he's got that to his game. And he's more than, obviously, he's done so much more than just score goals this year. But... Yeah. You've got to think the valuation of a young midfielder who's shown he can do it at the top level in Italy. Could be some big offers coming in for him this summer. Although he's in a pretty good spot at the moment, you would think for himself. Mm-hmm. Marcelo Flores scored as well again. Mm-hmm. Lovely break down the left. Tons of space there. He's lost to cornrows. So happy about that.
I know, me too.
Yeah. I just don't like cornrows. And we discussed it with JC, who had cornrows for a while.
Thankfully, is it cornrows on white dudes?
Yeah, I think so. Mm. Yeah, exactly. If you're a black dude, it works great. In fact, I would probably do that. Actually, I'll probably have a massive afro, actually. But
anyway. It takes you back to the Viking days with the cornrows.
Mm.
Is that where it started?
War.
Yeah. Is that where it started? Really?
They braid their hair before they went to war.
Really?
Oh, I didn't know that. I mean, that's where it started for whites.
Mm. Yeah, there weren't too many black guys in Viking Wars.
No.
As far as I know.
You're just making that up. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe that. It's a good story.
Now and again, Jimmy drops like a little knowledge. Yeah. Yeah. He's a complex human being, as our Jimmy.
Mm-hmm. It's like when Craig has watched like 64 documentaries over the last week, and he comes in and shares something about whales. That's what Jimmy just did.
Yeah. And it's a orca.
No, it's not actually. That is a beluga. No, it's like, oh god, Craig hasn't slept for 72 hours. He's watching a lot of documentaries.
He's dreaming of narwhals in his.
Well, so where the hell was I going with that? Oh yeah, so the cornrows are gone. As much as I liked him before, even more likable now. So we'll see how that form continues at Tigress. Tigress actually playing against Forge Tuesday. That's tomorrow.
That's right.
The Champions
Pretty
Cup,
cool. Yeah.
And FC Vancouver against the champs, Cruz Azul. That'll be a tough one.
Yeah.
Good luck, Dasso.
Yep. Dasso is the coach now, right? FC Dallas.
That's right.
FC Vancouver. That's fantastic. We will, by the way, be getting to that Vancouver situation, the story on tomorrow's podcast. Ace is joining us. Some we can touch on it now if you want. I mean, there were some very concerning comments from Axel Schultz late last week about the situation. What did I say?
Axel Schultz.
Yeah.
Isn't it Axel Schuster?
Schuster.
Who's Axel Schultz? Schultz was an old boxer. We've talked about. You've done this before.
Have I?
See? Yeah.
He's someone else, though, too. Axel Schultz is more than just a boxer. He's someone else.
Well,
I look it up, Craig.
He's the creator of the Peanuts cartoon.
Yes, Dr. Axel Schultz.
That might be where I got it from. Yeah.
And his cousin was a hockey player, Dennis Schultz.
Oh, okay, right. See?
With cornrows.
You'll learn a lot from this. With cornrows. Yeah. Craig, talk about Vancouver. Well, I look this
I don't want to.
Oh.
Doesn't make for a good podcast.
I tell you, that's bad news. Not good news coming out of Vancouver. It's worrying. It's worried me for a long time, but now I'm really worried.
Now you've been very, very realistic about the chances of them staying. And I'm not going to say negative, but I think the word is realism with the financing, with the stadium, with the timing, all of those things you've been quite realistic with.
Well, you see what's going on in the States has happened before with Vancouver, the Vancouver Grizzlies moving on to Memphis. The owner's got a sweet deal with a stadium and concessions and parking and taxpayer money paying for the stadium and all these different things. And that's still going to be on the table in the States. They often will vote down there for taxpayers' money for developing stadiums. Happens in MLS all the time. Happened in Salt Lake City. They raise taxes. They have a transient tax that goes for everybody that travels to Salt Lake, goes into a fund that helps pay for the stadium, various things like that. So you've got to think that there's a group out there looking at different cities in the States that would show an interest in the MLS and are looking for the same deal. NFL, these billionaires owners are getting taxpayer money to help fund these stadiums. Yeah, they're making absolutely gazillions of dollars and they expect taxpayers to pay for it. And that's not going to fly in Canada. It's not going to fly in Vancouver. So I'm not sure what they do about that.
Yeah, it's definitely concerning. Like Don Garber has previously, I think it was during the MLS playoffs, talked about the situation and described it as unsustainable. And then the press release by MLS spokesperson Dan Cordemache said, the Whitecaps continue to face unresolved business and stadium challenges that are limiting to the club's long-term future in the city. Like, that's the league-ish wing, that statement. Like, that doesn't project very well to the future and for that franchise, that club staying in the city, if nothing changes.
If this were a movie, that'd be some heavy foreshadowing.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Lowest match day revenue in the league. Is that what I think I read there?
Yeah, or like in the bottom, five.
Yeah.
Whereas they're near the top in terms of like stadium attendance and sellouts, right? Not sellouts at BC Place, but.
You hope that by going public, and this might have been strategic too from Axel's standpoint as well, by going public, you just conjure some more interest. But he said there's been, what, 30 or 40 companies, business looking into this and saying, no, it's not for us until you get your stadium sorted out.
Mm-hmm. And as great as Kerfoot has been, Greg Kerfoot, to the Canadian Association to Women's Programs and to soccer in this country, going back to the 86ers and the Vancouver Whitecaps, he's been amazing. But he still doesn't want to lose $15, $16 million a year. I get that.
Why? It's his problem.
So cheap. And he went through a divorce too, or maybe that's still going on too. You know, Jimmy, that will fucking get you.
Jimmy's losing $15 million a year there.
And a spatula, as we know. Dude, he's got the three. He's got a fork. He's got a spoon, and he's got a knife.
Yeah,
fork.
Fork.
And now the fork plates that didn't match.
And he also has the property on the moon.
Yes.
He always had that to fall back on.
That's right.
That's what I stood my ground with that.
Yeah, it's going up in price. It has to be.
I'll be right back. Okay. Right back.
Well, the one thing I wanted to bring up, though, there was, I remember the account tactical manager, he's an American account, and he was talking about how MLS should be American only. And I'm wondering, does this leave an opportunity for the CPL to raise its raise its visibility, its marketing, its brand in Canada to a point where it can be, the Canadian Premier League can be how you think of soccer when you first think of soccer in Canada? Is that an opportunity? If I'm going to spin positively, if Montreal were to go away, if Toronto FC were to go away, and then CPL and would be the preeminent, the paramount zenith of soccer in Canada. How many?
I think you just answered that. Because if they were all gone, you would only have the Canadian Premier League. So it would be the best league. I agree, but I think if Vancouver does leave, then maybe there's an opportunity that Vancouver Whitecaps comes back and joins the CPL. But I can't see TFC's going nowhere. Montreal, I don't know, but Vancouver, it's a very very tough situation out there. You hope to God that they end up staying. You don't want to see them leave, because it actually is a storied franchise.
Yeah.
It's been around an awful long time, a lot of history.
Yeah, in North America, like one of the oldest, one of the most successful over time. It would be a shame for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, imagine being a Whitecaps fan in the last year, what you've had to go through from initially the sale announcement, oh my God, and the rumors about them having to move, and then suddenly the team catches fire, brilliant season, historic season, and then some news about a potential stadium plot, and everyone feels good again about the Whitecaps, and then this happens. It's like, Jesus Christ, it's a roller coaster of 12 months. So hopefully something gets figured out there, but we'll talk to Asa Rahman.
Yeah.
Who's got his ear to the ground and all things Whitecaps tomorrow.
Where could you see them going if they did leave and they went to the States?
Indianapolis was mentioned, I believe, as a city that wants a team, has a stadium
there, you go,
potentially in place.
Las Vegas, I'm sure they would probably want one too.
Yeah, I could see Vegas.
I'm just thinking, though, if you had the choice of Vancouver or Indianapolis, and you're Thomas Mueller, and you're like, I've got to move to Indianapolis. But it's not. I like, no disrespect to Indianapolis, as we always say. But my God.
Why the club, though? Would it not need to get an expansion fee, I would think? Expansion fees. How much are they now, Craig? The expansion fees for MLS?
$500 million?
$500 million around.
Yeah. What's Vancouver? What are the Whitecaps worth now if they're going to be purchased to move?
Well, if they move, there's got to be $400 or $500 million.
Yeah, I mean the number they threw out,
$500 million, right?
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the money they, if I remember correctly, it was 420 million was, it was in that range when I remember them first talking about their value, the street value.
Do you know what? For me, it doesn't make sense because essentially you're buying the team. And really what I mean by this is you're buying the players, the coaches, staff, and a couple of people who else tags along with the team because they have no assets. You're buying the franchise. You're not buying a stadium. You're not buying a training facility. You are just buying the team and brand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is why I think it'd be a cut price deal to relocate. But then you've still got to get a stadium, right? So say it's Indianapolis, for example, and I read that. I think maybe Dubsy, that's the one that you sent us. Anyway, if it's Indianapolis, they haven't got a stadium at the moment, but they have a plan in place to get one if needed. So that's another, you know, few hundred million on top of the purchase price.
Mm-hmm. So the latest valuation, Sharms, which was last year, beginning of 2025, the Whitecaps were valued at approximately $440 million USD.
140?
$440 million okay. US dollars.
But that was with the lease to the stadium too, right? What are you doing, Wonga?
I'm sorry. I was bringing up that first clip that we won there, the clip that
you'll get to shortly. But yeah, that was presumably including the lease at BC Place.
And you were right, Sharms, earlier. They're 30th out of 30 MLS teams in terms of revenue generated last year.
Right. Oh, please work this out. Because Vancouver, BC is the hub of Canadian soccer. Has been for a long time.
Well, if they leave, they better not take the Whitecaps name with them.
Oh.
Ooh. I can stand on that one.
Craig is laying down a law now.
Keep the name. Keep it.
The Indy Whitecaps. No. Not happening. Yeah. I don't think it works.
The Memphis Grizzlies. all those grizzly bears in Memphis.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're not there yet.
It's cheaper to keep the name, right?
That's right. Well, Utah Jazz, there's not a lot of jazz going up in the Mormons.
No. Yeah, there's a lot of Mormonism there, isn't there?
Yeah. You say Mormoning?
Mormonism.
No, I said Mormons. Yeah. Oh, him.
No.
Even when the Lakers moved from Minnesota, Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Sports Lakers doesn't make much sense in Los Angeles, really.
No. Yeah. It's so funny. I never even questioned it. It's just been around for so long. Like, LA Lakers.
So the LA Lakers moved from Minnesota originally?
Yep.
Correct.
I didn't know that.
When was that? Yeah. I didn't know that either.
In the 70s.
Really?
Late 60s, 70s, yeah.
Really? And then, okay. But they became a force in, the 80s, I guess, right? The Magic era. Prior to that, they weren't much. Yeah.
No, they were good. They were always they were always good. Before that, they had they were always good in the 70s too.
Okay.
Los Angeles Dodgers, the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Yep.
The tram Dodgers. You don't get a lot of tram dodging in Los Angeles either.
Yeah.
That's why they're called the Dodgers, the tram dodging.
Yeah.
I thought it was a draft dodging. Yeah. Anyway, we have a clip to play, right? It's great. So yesterday, David Moyes, Everton, they tied. Who was it? Was it Brighton?
Yep.
Yeah, late the late goal. Moyes celebrated, left his own, went onto the pitch and got a yellow card for it. And then David Moyes post match reacted to his yellow card. So let's play it there, Wonga.
Imagine booking for celebrating. Who wants to see managers getting booked for celebrating? You know what I mean? I mean, I don't think I'd have danced down if the goal was in the 55th minute, if you know what I mean. But, you know, it means they've got nothing about them at all. No thoughts about what football means or what it means to the managers without absolutely just saying, no, you just can't step outside that line or I'm going to book you.
I just love it.
He's it started
it
swearing.
Sounds like an actor playing a football coach. Don't you think?
His accent is manager. Brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a valid point he's got, though, isn't it? And I've been thinking about this. I used to be like, you know, believe it or not, miserable on the topic about players getting booked for their shirts coming off, saying, well, they should just keep their shirts on. Like, who gives a shit? Let them celebrate. I've changed in that regard. Let them have some fun out there.
That's good.
Joy.
That's good about you, though, Sharms. It shows you're adaptable, willing to change, malleable still, not fixated on the past and comfort. Mm-hmm. You're willing to embrace new things.
I think it's okay to change your mind now and again. It's important to challenge yourself.
I'm now a big believer in the cock ring.
God.
Now they finally made a small one small enough.
That's right. You call it the pinky ring around my house.
One of those little ring-a-los around them.
Hula hoop. Okay. So let's see. That's secular. That's how a show should work. You know, you start off somewhere and you return to it. So the cock ring.
It's symbolic.
It's symbolic and it's so show together.
Yeah, brings us all together. God,
and also your moral arc.
So that's. I don't think there's anything else. We can touch on. There's nothing else to touch on. I mean, listen, no transfer deadlines later today. But anything else you want to get to?
No, I'm good. I think this Vancouver thing will be top of mind for the next while. And I think it's great that Ace is jumping on with us tomorrow. And then Thursday, Jordan Lestro's jumping on with us. Champ from USL in Tampa Bay, if I remember correctly. Yep. So we'll have a lot of good, great content this weekend. And our friend Craig Forrest is off to his golf junket, his yearly golf junket in Palm Springs. So he'll be maybe on, he might be on, but he'll be on holiday, just so we all know, everyone knows.
I wouldn't be on. Well, ask Craig. I wouldn't just enjoy yourself.
There's no chance he's going to be on.
No. You never know. He misses us sometimes.
I miss you all the time.
I miss you all the time.
That's nice.
Are we 3 hours behind? So.
Yeah. It would be, I think it would be if we push back record time to 9 a.m. or, but you're going to be on the golf course early, no? You guys play 2 days and all that kind of stuff?
No, just one now.
Okay.
Usually about 1 o'clock every day.
Oh, really? That's great. Yeah.
Eight guys.
Still, there's a lot of golf still. A lot of golf. All right. Anyway, that's Footy Prime. Listen, we are doing the push-up challenge starting this Thursday. Some of us are, anyway. And you can join our team. Mm-hmm. If you hadn't signed up to our newsletter, why don't you just rub your armpit?
I don't know. Felt like rubbing it.
It was very primal.
It was very primal. That's weird. So once again,
everyone listening can smell your pheromones.
I'm fairly primal.
We mentioned it on the newsletter on Friday, which you can find at wearefootyprime.com and sign up to it. But we will be putting on our socials too. We can join the Footy Prime push-up challenge team. 2,000 push-ups between the 5th and the 22nd, I think it is.
For Canadian Mental Health Associations.
Mm-hmm. So think about it, and we can all brag and mock those that don't join up. Okay? Make sure you like.
What it's about.
That's really what it's about.
It's how we're raising money for a great cause. No. It's about mocking each other. JC doing his squats.
Gotta get those glutes tight.
I'll be doing a lot more than squatting.
Oh, there he is.
I've been squatting in the background actually for the whole show.
Whole show, have you really?
I got the cock ring.
What the hell is that?
Various shapes depending on the day. Often in it.
That's JC. Anyway, make sure you like don't like it, but you can definitely retweet it. Subscribe to all we do in our various channels, be that YouTube or Instagram. We're kind of starting TikTok-y a little bit now as well. And I know it's not called TikTok, but whatever. And until next time, we're back tomorrow. And we'll talk about football stuff.
Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
You could hear it in your voice the whole time, Sharm. So you're like, oh, this is going to be dated as soon as we hit publish.
Yeah.
But it's not. I feel like we talked about it a lot aside from just the potential deals and transfers.
Just the more I spoke about it, the more I thought, man, this should have been tomorrow's show. And we will refer to the transfer tomorrow, of course. What happens? This is almost like my TV, my brain working here, because it used to always be that way on the transfer deadline day. So I used to do a show at like 5 or 5.30 p.m. on the transfer deadline day. It's always a panic to get all the news in. So it's not that.
You okay?
I'm still recording.
Right? You okay?
You know what?
I know. No one's going to die.
I think I'll be okay.
I'm going to stop recording.